This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PTB Wrestling Network fans, welcome back to your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your tri-host, Scott Criscolo. We are, as usual, jammed to the gills with information, analysis, and opinion this week. Episode 167. And if there are three guys, because we have a guest this week, three other guys besides me, I would have no problem spending the inside of an elimination chamber with, even if it's wrapped in barbed wire and on fire, because who knows if that even happens on Sunday, because it just might. It's these guys. Let me bring them in. The purveyor of the Kings of Sport Patreon. And he is as deliciously undefeated as a past number 67, Bob Kuchenberg, who played on the undefeated 72 Dolphins. And I think this guy would look sexy in teal. The Godfather, Nate Milton.
What's going on, brother? It's good. Good to be back. Good to reunite the team. You know, normally, Scotty, yes, I have a lot of energy on these shows, but it's been a long week at work. A lot of projects landed upon my desk, including a lot of voiceover work this week. Because I do that now because this is the new timeline that we're in.
That's right.
So my voice has been at work a lot this week. So normally I'm out here trying to create my own shots. You know, I'm trying to push the ball up tempo, but this week I think I'm gonna settle into my role and settle into the post. And you and Steve Willie can just feed me as necessary. I'll be Taj Gibson this week.
Wow. Oh man. Oh man. Basket hanger like Shaq when he was in Cleveland. Oh, I love it. Oh man. Well, definitely. Steve and I have no problem throwing dimes to get you your 71 points to beat Shaq for the scoring title like we did for the Admiral in 1990, whatever that was, six. Anyway, Brother Nate, always a pleasure. As mentioned, our point guard, he's our John Stockton. He is reserved, quiet, but steely when he needs to be. The conscience of Place to Be Nation, Steve Willie.
Nate, you took my Taj Gibson, but I will say that I, for the first time, I never wanted to coach my own kids. I just... it's not something for me, but I've been helping coach the Y League, and it was the last practice, and we did parents versus kids. There was like seven kids, 10 years old, who threw their bodies around, and two coaches and one of the moms and another mom coming in and out. And I'm still sore today from last night because it's like you have to win, right? You have to. But you also have to be careful because if you get too much momentum going, someone's going to get their head cracked in. And I don't want that to happen.
Someone's going to get their wig split.
Yeah, someone will get their wig split. And I didn't want it to be my own kid. And I didn't want to get sued from someone else's kid.
But did you want to wrap them in barbed wire and set them on fire?
No, that's what I podcast in. I podcast in barbed wire every show.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's apparently the cool thing now. All right, Steve, always a pleasure. Guys, we got a jacked show tonight. We've got some New Japan New Beginnings recaps, Steve. We have Impact No Surrender was this past Saturday. And, of course, Sunday night was NXT Vengeance Day, not Valentine's Day. Vengeance Day. Vengeance. Sometimes Valentine's Day is vengeance. And, of course, this Sunday we have Elimination Chamber. So a lot of reviews and previews to do this week. But first off, we're going to talk about the flamethrower and bring in, of course, one of our favorite guests, Steve. You sadly were not able to join us the last time he was on, so it is awesome that you're here, and it's awesome that he's here. He is the purveyor of WrestleNomics, and it has been a busy week for him, a bit busy last couple weeks to get the skinny. He was actually on the conference call longer than Vince was. How impressive, Mr. Brandon Thurston. BT, how are you, man?
I'm great. It's great to be on with all of you, and it's great to be back on with Steve, and with Scott, and with Brother Nate as well. Actually, I was not on the conference call, although I was listening in. But uh-huh. Yeah, it. I don't know. It's been an issue of much speculation. Did Vince leave the room or not? I don't know. I think I could hear him breathing throughout. Some of the show.
Even he though sounds like Darth Vader, that's why
he does. That's exactly how I described it on WrestleNomics Radio. You could hear him kind of in the background as others were answering questions for him, including when a question was directed directly at him. One Laura Martin, who is an analyst from a firm called Needham, she will call out Vince in particular, and she did it on this occasion too, but Nick Khan jumped in.
Nick Khan, the mole. Yes, Nick Khan.
Other kind of in the background. Yeah, they were like, yeah. It was a quarter where WWE announced its full year 2020 earnings, where it announced the most profitable year that the company has ever had, even when you adjust for inflation, more profitable than the Attitude Era years of 1999 and 2000. Most profitable year they ever had, the highest revenue year they ever had. And but then there's been news this week that employees who expected to get raises or bonuses and promotions who worked through a pandemic have had all their raises and bonuses and promotions put on hold indefinitely. But they did get a $3,000 stock award, or at least a lot of them did. Get a $3,000 stock award, which will vest next month. So there was a lot of unhappiness, and I don't know how much this helps, the stock award helps, but that's what's happening most recently.
That's crazy for a year, and maybe it's because they can make money in other ways, but just fathom that. Like, listen, the Attitude Era, obviously things were not as expensive. Pay-per-views were only $35 a month. There was no network, so it was kind of balancing out. You had live events all year, and then this year you got your network, but you've got no live events, you know, not even WrestleMania, which is usually their big nugget. But the question, I guess then the question is, Brandon, did the Peacock thing, which we'll talk about, because I don't think, I don't know if we talked about it when you were on.
No, it hadn't happened yet.
Okay, so does the Peacock billion or 20 million, whatever they get for the first, is that part of 2020? Or obviously not, right?
No. So that it'll go into effect. The migration will happen on March 18th.
Right.
And then it was made clear that the biggest payments will be the earliest in terms of the total 5 years. So the biggest payments will be in year one of the 5 year deal. It is a $1 billion deal over 5 years. So the language that the Wall Street Journal and the Sports Business Journal have used is more than $1 billion, according to somebody who's familiar with the deal. Mm. So that would average out to $200 million a year. Mm-hmm. And usually these media deals escalate over time where so the average value is 200. So the middle year would be 200 million, and then probably – the assumptions that I've made are just, you know, 10% escalators in each year. So 10% less in year two, 10% less in year one, and then, you know, 10% more than 200 million in year four and year five. Mm. You'll get the Peacock money for, I guess, roughly three quarters of 2021. But the reason why the stock has not been performing that well lately, there was a little bit of a run up around the time of the Peacock deal, actually the morning of the Peacock deal, market opened, and the stock actually went down a bit. I don't know if I think a lot of it had to do with they put out the press release that the Peacock deal had been made, but also they put out financial guidance basically saying that 2021 was going to be only about as profitable as 2020. They basically gave a range of their profitability that was right in the, you know, and the 2020 year landed right in the middle of the range that they're forecasting for 2021. So the market and I even expected that, you know, 2021 would be an even more profitable year than 2020 because of the nature of all these TV deals that they have are guaranteed to escalate over time. So it was surprising to learn that 2021 was going to be only as profitable as 2020. And I think the reason for that is that the Thunderdome is turning out to be quite expensive. Though he's also incurring extra expenses by bringing employees back from furlough. But it does look like the Thunderdome is causing a lot of expense in terms of it's more expensive, this version of the Thunderdome, and probably the Capitol Wrestling Center is included as part of that. But this production set that they have now is more expensive than the pre-COVID touring model.
Interesting.
Which is, when I was originally trying to figure out when the Thunderdome first came out, like, well, how expensive is this? I figured, well, maybe they would be willing to spend as much as they were spending in the touring model. And it looked like when we got the results for Q3 that it was way less expensive. But in fact, there were production incentives that were sort of obscuring that. And now, at least with the addition of the Capitol Wrestling Center, which started in October, which was part of Q4, it does look like the Thunderdome is even more expensive. And in fact, the CFO, Christina Salen, made it pretty clear that once they return to touring, they expect the expenses to be lower. So, and there are some there is some expense related to now in 2021. They're going to still be doing a Monday Friday schedule, whereas in 2019, for most of the year in 2019, they were still doing that Monday Tuesday schedule with Raw and SmackDown. But yeah, Thunderdome's expensive. Stock price is not doing that well, even though they had their most profitable year ever, and they're deciding to put on hold employee raises and promotions, just to try to get expenses down, I guess, and to try to help the stock price out.
I mean, Scotty, it only makes sense that Thunderdome would come with extra expenses. I mean, you have to pay for Tina Turner.
Yeah, sure.
Like, that's off top. You got to pay Tina Turner's salary, so that's not cheap, man. She's not coming.
You got to pay Mel.
You probably got to throw in some extra for hush money when Mel is involved. It's a lot. It's a lot going on there. But Brandon, last time we talked a lot about the touring schedule, right, and the house shows and how that works into the finances. And I guess, you know, kind of touching on that a little bit more and digging into these numbers, do you feel like when they go back to a regular touring schedule, there will be changes from the model that we saw prior to 2020? In other words, like, do you feel like this experience with Thunderdome, this experience with COVID, will give them any ideas or incentive to change that model to make it either more cost effective or make it more of a value for the fan out there buying the ticket?
I think we'll see fewer house shows. That would be my guess. I think it's going to be, there were questions asked about, you know, when they'd be able to go back to running shows. It sounds like they're not going to, WrestleMania is not going to be the marker of the return to live events. Unless, you know, things with COVID in the U.S. changed to a great extent between now and then. But it sounds like WrestleMania is going to be a one-off event with live fans in attendance. There's been no transparency or clarity about what the future of live events is going to be. Live events have struggled for the last few years in terms of being profitable just because the attendance has fallen since 2017. And, it's not getting any cheaper to run live events. And perhaps a one factor in that is that talent, the competition for talent has probably driven salaries up. But, I think we talked about last time, there's an argument for the fact that maybe there's a lot of hidden benefits to running house shows in terms of giving wrestlers experience, in terms of basically a house show is a marketing event, a touring marketing event around the country and around the world. But I don't know. My guess would be that it'll be a slow rollout and a slow return to live events. I imagine there'll be TV tapings first, maybe before they do house shows, if they do any house shows. And, you know, it just may be the case that house shows never really do return to the full schedule. But that's just my speculation.
So when we talk about live events, that was my next question was, we're obviously talking about house shows because, number one, my two questions spinning off of that, Brandon, number one, were they concerned? Cause the call was before the Super Bowl, right? Wasn't it? I think it was the Thursday before, right? Now, we all know, obviously, there was, what, 27,000, I think, that Sunday, the Bucks-Chiefs game. And I think a decent hunk was first responders, like 7,500. So really, in terms of fans, there was probably like 21,000, probably. And it seemed like people were spread out. But of course, then after, you know, Brady won another one, everybody went batshit and lost all sense of, you know, personal responsibility and ran around Tampa with no masks on and getting drunk and being fucking stupid. So is WWE, do you think, concerned about that? And remember, they get, and obviously they have 2 days, so they'll combine for 2 days, probably get what, 70,000 total. I don't know if there's gonna be floor seats. I doubt it. And number two, I thought I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, I thought I heard that they said the earliest we would start seeing even Raws and SmackDowns would be like 4th of July.
I don't think anybody said that from WWE recently, but I don't know. I would. It really depends the capacity that they could hold in the event. If I imagine they'll be given a limit about, which they haven't said anything about publicly. They've basically they continue to say that, you know, the safety protocols and the ticket availability will give information about that later. But if they I'm searching to look here, but I can't find it. There's an excerpt from the New York Times about what the capacity was for Raymond James Stadium for the Super Bowl.
And I want to say it was like 22,500, if I remember correctly, somewhere around there.
And that was fans, because I know that they had a few thousand of just first responders and, you know, cops and fire and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
maybe if they have something like 22,500 or 2,500 on each day, then the total capacity over 2 days would be 50,000. Granted, a lot of people are going to buy tickets for both days. Then again, have you guys seen the schedule of the indie events that are going to happen on this weekend? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I wanted to ask. I'm glad you brought that up, Brandon, because that was part of my question for later on. But since you brought it up, you know, having experience with independent wrestling, like, you know, being in school and going to events and working with some of the companies that are going to be down there, like, what have you heard so far about companies starting events up and like whether they've had fallout and how that's doing financially for them? Like, have you been in talks with some of the groups that you're associated with?
I'm not super in touch with what everybody's doing. I haven't wrestled since March. Mm-hmm. I had to look back at, like, I don't know if I was looking at my cage match or watching what and realized, I did wrestle in March 2020, but,
yeah, because I remember, like, one of the times we talked to you, you were just starting up with Beyond, with, like, the Uncharted Territory show.
Yeah, but I know there's a lot of wrestlers who are still, you know, working through this, especially if you're ambitious. You don't want to, you know, sit out on the sidelines all this time. You want to continue to have matches and continue to get your name out there. But I know there was a lot of concern from at least some people I talked to about how the collective went. Mm-hmm. In Indianapolis, I don't know when that was. Was that in the fall? But it was a series of shows that people don't know. The Collective was a multi-day, multi-promotion event that was supposed to happen on WrestleMania weekend. And obviously that didn't happen. And then they pushed it to happen later in Indianapolis, Indiana, I guess. And there were a lot of people who came away from that weekend with COVID. There was, you know, just some... You know, I didn't watch a lot of it. I saw things and saw people talk online. So I don't want to say too much about, you know, what it looked like. But I talked to a few people who worked it, and, you know, I didn't hear anything about COVID testing being required. I have heard some other promotions require COVID tests in indies. You know, you have to go get it done yourself, obviously. But I have heard some indie promotions. And I'm not talking about anybody that I know of who's got a show this, you know, this WrestleMania weekend. So, as far as having people required to have COVID tests in advance of those events, but, I heard some discussion following the Collective that, some people felt that it, was a sort of a bad brand image, event for independent wrestling in general. I think that sentiment is kind of overhyped. I think I think it's a bad thing that that people caught COVID, and it's a bad thing that people weren't required to have COVID tests. So there weren't some stricter safety rules put in place. But I think, you know, I think people are quick to forget what has happened, especially when the responsibility of independent promotions is so fragmented. I don't think independent wrestling has this one whole brand image. I think people understand or are not aware of the degree to which, you know, whoever is responsible and what brand is what brand. Or I think they do understand how different brands are different brands. And, you know, maybe it was these companies that were involved and these companies were not involved. But anyway, yeah, I would be concerned about what's going to happen that weekend and who's going, whether people are going to be transmitting COVID. And, you know, once again, this is in Florida, which has not had the strictest COVID restrictions in the first place.
Well, they did have a parade, you know, last week for the Buccaneers. So I'm actually I'm just kind of shooting a little bit here. Like with you mentioned the cost of the Thunderdome, and Nate and Scott, you can answer this too if you know. Tampa Bay Rays are starting up their first home game is April the 9th. That's 6 weeks away. Like, has there been any talk of, and I'm just saying this out of just ignorance, because I haven't seen anything, and maybe there has been, of like, what then? Like, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's not something I've looked deeply into. That has come up at least one time that I've come across that. Oh, yeah, the Rays season is going to be starting up again soon, and that will make Tropicana Field no longer available to WWE, so they're going to have to find another venue. I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing something out there, but maybe they stay at Raymond James Stadium for a while, and being at because there would be no other sports team that would need it, right? Unless there's something I'm not aware of, which there could be. I'm not following.
I wonder
sports
if you know. Closely. I just no. I don't think so. But
is there a soccer team or something? Maybe.
I don't know. Is there an MLS team?
Honestly, football won't be starting up until the summer with preseason, if they even do preseason.
Yeah. I have a place, and I'm pretty sure it's still open, and it was one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time was in this building. But I don't, and I think it's still in use, sort of, and I'm sure if they talk to the city of Houston and maybe cleaned it up, why don't they use the Astrodome? I think they still use it. It's still standing. And
I would imagine they want to stay in Florida, though, because it's clear that Florida doesn't care and will let them do whatever they want.
But their numbers aren't terrible. So, you know, in Florida's defense, they've been pretty good as compared to my state, Connecticut, which fucking sucks.
I think Brandon's right, though. You know, just kind of looking at the landscape of what teams will be in season, Scotty. You know, given that, you know, the Tampa Bay Mutiny are no longer a thing. R.I.P. R.I.P. to the Mutiny. Raymond James would be, I guess, if they wanted to go that route, probably the one they could broker a deal with. Unless, irony of all ironies, they had to holler at that man Shad Khan and see if they could work something out.
Well, they could bring the prodigal son Nick to go there and talk to his mystery brother and mystery father there. And come on, that's funny, Brandon. Come on, that's funny.
Nick Khan's sister is I'm searching for her name here. She is some sort of actress.
Killer
brother. Killer Khan.
Yeah, well my sister broke Andre's leg.
He mentioned it on the conference call.
Oh, that's interesting.
That is hilarious.
But Ninotchka Khan.
That does sound like somebody that Vince Sr. would have booked. Yeah. Just saying, but I don't know. It's pretty. I just find that funny. But no, you're right. He probably wants to stay in Florida. Obviously, the Lightning are using their building. So they can't go back there till depending how bad, and the Lightning are pretty good. So, I'm sure that the Stanley Cup playoffs will go into May and June. So it's not like they can hop back to the St. Pete Times Forum, or whatever the hell the place is called. St. Pete Times Forum, I think. I don't think they can go back there for a while anyway. So, Yeah, I mean,
I would wonder if they wouldn't look for a stadium, because then they could have more assurance about the safety of mm-hmm. bringing in fans on an ongoing basis if it's outdoors.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
But yeah, I don't know. I there's probably no limit to venues that they could possibly have. All they need is a venue. But Amway Center would still be occupied for a while, right? For basketball. How long is the basketball
with the Magic
until?
Yeah, the Magic. Well, they started in summer? January. So what are they going to? They started Christmas Day. So we're looking probably early August, most likely.
Right.
Yeah. Depending how fast, I mean, we're talking the Magic too. So we're not exactly talking about playing at the Staples Center. So they may get the, I don't know how the Magic are at the moment, but you know, I would say they, you know, depending if the Magic do make the playoffs, maybe they could get there in early June, mid June, depending how far they want the playoffs to go. Did it sound like, well, then let me ask you this then, Brandon, getting back to them saying that 2020 was such a big year, money for them. Where do we think they made the money if there were no live events? I mean, where do they get all this scratch from? Because, I mean, no WrestleMania is killer. Because I know WrestleMania is a pretty hefty hunk of there. Because if you count everything, Hall of Fame, TakeOver, Ross, like the whole from Thursday to Tuesday, they make a killing. And that's a good hunk of their revenue. But without any of that, where do we think they made the money?
Well, they made, so if we look at their revenue, profitability is a little bit different to talk about. But if we look at their revenue, they made $974 million in revenue, almost $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And more than half, $538 million of that came from what they report as core content rights fees. And that's just the rights fees that they get in the U.S. and around the world for Raw and SmackDown, and NXT is in there too, but predominantly Raw and SmackDown. So more than half of their revenue this year came from Raw and SmackDown TV rights fees, and it'll be because a lot of those fees are guaranteed to escalate in the following years of the contracts. It'll be even more revenue in that line next year. They also made $186 million from the WWE Network. And that, there's some other money in media there, from advertising and sponsorships and from other, which included at least one Saudi Arabia event this year. But, what else is in there? Reality TV is in there as well. And W Studios. But anyway, the media division, $868 million out of 974. So that's almost the entire business. There's just, you know, $20 million in live events, to the extent that they did live events in the first few months of the year. And then they still managed to make some decent money in merchandise sales online. E-commerce really overperformed and somewhat offset the lack of any venue merchandise sales after March. And the product licensing sales did okay. It was down from last year a little bit, but you know, the majority of the revenue came from media. We think of, you know, pro wrestling businesses as these businesses that are a destination business where you run your TV show and you try to promote your ticket sales and your pay-per-view events. And that's less and less what the business really is in terms of the finances. The business is made in the thing that you used to build your destination, which is the TV show, which is totally upside down from what the business used to be when, you know, wrestling shows were cheaply done in studios because they had to keep that cost down because they made their real money at the box office and their live events division.
Yeah.
If you took out WrestleMania in 2019, might not have even been profitable. So, you know, there's a number of quarters in a row where the entire live events division did not make a profit in 2019. So it's the vast majority of their profitability is coming from their ability to sell media, which is just a sort of business fancy way of saying their ability to sell video, whether that video is on demand or live, but especially live, because that's where the growing value is in the broadcast of their live content.
Now, Brandon, last time you were here, we got into a nice friendly game of what if, one of us, I'm not going to say which one of us, but one of us, you know, kept coming up with these fantastical scenarios where, you know, just for instance, the ghost of Vince McMahon Sr. would come back and take over the company. I'm not gonna go that crazy here, Brandon, but given the news of the Peacock deal that happened a week or so after we talked to you last, do you find it more likely now that this has occurred that NBC, you know, Universal, that whole conglomerate, that there would be more than just this current relationship with the WWE? Like, could you see a scenario maybe 5 years from now where they take a more hands-on approach in this business relationship?
Only if they acquire it, which I think is more likely now.
And that was going to be my follow-up question. Like, how likely do you see that happening in the future, given that this has kind of entrenched that relationship more so than it has been?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could see NBC Universal taking some stock, investing some stock and investing in buying some shares. In fact, NBC Universal and Viacom invested in some shares around the time of the XFL, the first run of the XFL, not the second run. I don't see NBC Universal. Well, I guess maybe they could. I don't know if they own more shares, but ultimately the voting shares are owned overwhelmingly by Vince McMahon, who has Class B shares, which he only has about a third of the shares in total. But because he owns special Class B shares, which is not unique to WWE, Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg are like this as well. Their shares count 10 times more in terms of voting power than anybody else's shares. And this is the case only for McMahon family members and their descendants. But that does not include, everybody always wants to know, that does not include Triple H. Triple H owns some shares as part of his compensation, but he does not get to own the special Class B shares. but ultimately, Vince is the one who's going to be in, I don't know, most of the creative control of the company. I think NBCU gives them, and probably Fox too, give them a fair amount of feedback on what they like or maybe don't like. On the shows, including sometimes when people throw piss at each other, they probably don't like that. But I see NBC Universal being, it makes more sense for them to acquire this company, because I think it's, you know, if you look at it now, they've got two big deals with WWE. They're both worth about $1 billion or a little bit more than $1 billion over the course of 5 years. And I think it's kind of like leasing a property. Why would you want to lease a property or a car if you can afford to just buy it? And WWE's market cap is just under $4 billion today. NBC Universal and Comcast is a far, far bigger company than WWE. They probably have or could get, and they may have it right now. I would have to look at their SEC filings, but they may have enough cash on hand to just by WWE if such a deal could be made. I don't see Vince McMahon giving it up in his lifetime, but this makes it more likely that if WWE was ever to be acquired by anyone, it would most likely be NBC Universal. I think the question for NBC Universal though is, do you want to own WWE? Do you want to be in charge of managing a wrestling company? And do you feel confident that you can put the people in charge, whether it's whether it's supervising Vince if he actually sells in his lifetime, or whether it's replacing the people who, you know, take over for Vince? Do you want to be in charge of running that wrestling company, or are you confident that you can run it effectively?
Right.
There are examples throughout wrestling history of that being done not well, but there are, I don't know. Bellator is an example of a not a wrestling company, but an MMA company that's owned by Viacom.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think it's out of the question. UFC is sold out to WME. Is that what it is? And they're still doing well. So maybe it's possible. I personally think that it can't be worse than what it is right now with Vince McMahon in charge. The difference between WWE right now and WCW back then is that WWE has the benefit of getting enormous TV rights fees that WCW just didn't live in a time where that was possible for them. And WWE has a couple of decades of name ID and brand value built up behind it. That just makes it a far more recognizable brand. And it's a brand that businesses have become increasingly comfortable with over time. I think the unfortunate thing is that while WWE has enhanced its brand value tremendously with other businesses over time, it has done so at the expense, or has, you know, simultaneously not cared for its relationship with consumers, that is, wrestling fans.
Real quick, Brandon, like one last thing on this NBC part of it, you know, in terms of the overall business. You mentioned Fox. When does that deal expire? And once it does, could you see a scenario where NBC, much like we've seen with HBO Max and some of these other big conglomerates, will try to get everything WWE related under their umbrella rather than having to share the pie with Fox, so to speak?
Right. So the Fox deal and the NBCU deal for Raw and SmackDown, respectively, or SmackDown and Raw, respectively, they're lined up. They started and they end at the same time. So they end September 2024. I could see, I've just speculation. So they'll start to negotiate in probably the middle of 2022, next year, and then they'll probably finish a deal, if past history is any indication, by the middle of 2023. But you know, it's altogether possible that NBC Universal could acquire. I don't think this is the most likely scenario, but it's altogether possible that NBC could acquire WWE in those negotiations, and then could also acquire the rights to SmackDown as part of that deal, and then could put SmackDown wherever they feel it's best fit. I think that's your question, right?
Yeah, because I just, you know, kind of looking at some of the things, and in particular, like I mentioned, like with HBO Max kind of shoring up their properties, you know, this is not tied to wrestling at all, but I feel like one of the reasons, you know, when you look at the companies under HBO Max's auspices and, you know, a show like The Venture Brothers, which was on Adult Swim and had a deal with Hulu, and the speculation is one of the reasons that show was canceled is because why are we paying money for this show that's under our corporate structure, but it's shown on another network? And so I'm wondering, like, if NBC felt that way, like, would there be a scenario where they're just like, if you want WWE, you got to come through us? It's like that Chappelle Show sketch where Calvin worked at Wack Arnold's. He's like, if you want the fish sandwich, you got to come through Calvin, baby. Nobody gets Wack Arnold's unless they come through Calvin. I'm wondering, would NBC be so invested in the WWE product that they're like, if you want WWE, you got to come to the Peacock?
Right. And like I said, they could just acquire the rights to SmackDown as part of acquiring the company, or they would therefore be in control of deciding where the SmackDown rights go, I guess. But what I could see, and so there's been some reports, and even before there was this report, there was just some speculation or analysis by a firm called Lightshed by Rich Greenfield, who is one of these guys who appears on CNBC sometimes, where he talked about it makes sense for, in fact, NBC Universal and Warner Media to merge, which I'm just thinking about this for the first time. But you could see think about their streaming products. You know, HBO Max is the Warner Media streaming product. Peacock is the NBCU streaming product. They're not exactly the leaders right now. I think the leaders are Netflix, which has been around for a while, and Disney Plus seems to be doing really well. So maybe you end up in a situation a couple of years from now where HBO Max and Peacock aren't exactly killing it with their new streaming products, and cable subscriptions are continuing to fall down. And maybe it makes an increasing amount of sense for these companies to merge together and sort of create a little streaming bundle. But who knows? But I think that would be interesting in terms of what if that happened.
What would happen?
And by the way, what I was getting to there is that Jeff Shell, who is the NBC Universal CEO, supposedly, you know, reportedly said to people just before he was taking that job, which he took recently, I think within the last year, he apparently told people that he thought it made sense to work towards a merger with Warner Media. But anyway, how would that, if that happened in this dream, I think that's interesting. How would that affect the wrestling business? Because Warner Media is the TV partner of AEW.
Yep.
I think it may make sense for Warner Media to acquire AEW someday. Again, why continue to pay hundreds of millions of dollars to lease this property when you can just own it outright and own the content that you broadcast? So who knows? Maybe there's a scenario where you know, WWE and AEW end up under the same parent company someday.
That would be the greatest day of my life.
Yeah, and then we get whoever, like, I don't even know who the head of HBO, or actually it's not even, it wouldn't even be HBO, it would be whoever is the head of AT&T. Like, they just show up on Dynamite and Raw, like Vince like Vince did at that Nitro back in the day. Just, I own everything. Me, Herbert Jackson from AT&T.
You know who that is.
Yep. Oh my God, what's he doing here? It's funny you say that, Brandon, because I was going to bring that up, but I'm glad you took my Thunder, because there's no show named Thunder anymore. Because back in January of last year, Warner and Universal got together to distribute physical media, Blu-rays and 4K and that kind of thing. So they're already kind of, I wouldn't say they're in bed together. They're kind of going steady, maybe. But then there was an article in the Hollywood Reporter back in November that says, analyst argues Warner Media and NBC Universal should be merged.
It's Jeff Greenfield. Yeah.
Yeah. We love, and we like Jeff.
Rich Greenfield.
Rich Greenfield.
Excuse me. Greenfield is a different guy.
Yeah. He's Jeff Greenfield's the political guy for years. Like Jeff Greenfield, actually. So I'm not going to lie. It's, be honest with you, Brandon, this is probably going to be a he said, she said thing probably for the next few years. I don't think this discussion's going to go away.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, if you think about Hulu is a precedent that there are these big media companies that will work together if they feel like it makes sense. With when Hulu, you know, now Hulu, I believe, is owned in the majority by NBCU. I looked into this once.
It's owned by Disney.
It's Disney. It's Disney and NBCU.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But before, it was Disney, NBCU, and Fox. So, but I think that was a result of those media companies, those TV companies, you know, sitting there looking at what Netflix was doing and seeing that we were seeing the beginning of cord cutting and thinking, well, we got to do something about it. And right. They got together and they did Hulu. And I don't know what the future of Hulu is, but I think there is precedent for these media companies getting together and trying to do something to protect themselves against the changes in media.
I think Hulu, let me just get this point out, Nick, sorry. Hulu apparently is probably in trouble because when Disney did their big unveiling last year, one of the things that they talked about was kind of having like a, I think they were calling it Star or Lunar or Cosmic or something. I don't remember the name, but it's going to be almost like a Disney After Dark. Because let's be honest, every property that that's a little too is over PG that Disney owns is on Hulu. For instance, other than the couple of movies that are on HBO Max, every X-Men movie, except I think Origins Wolverine, but nobody wants to watch that anyway, are all on Disney Plus, except the two Wolverines, the two Deadpools. Because, of course, those are a little, you know. So something tells me Hulu might be in trouble when Disney eventually pulls all of their more mature content into this new tab that's going to be on Disney Plus. But that's another discussion for another day. Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
Well, yeah, because it's just all a game of musical chairs. And when the music stops, we'll see which companies are standing and which companies are on the outside looking in, like Quibi, RIP Quibi. But real quick, I just wanted to make a note for Steve Willey, because I know that this is what Steve Willey was waiting for. The current CEO of AT&T, which is ostensibly the head honcho at Warner, has the perfect name for a wrestling heel. John T. Stanky. So CEO Stanky will show up on Dynamite and Raw and own the wrestling world in 5 years. At least that's what I'm hearing Brandon say.
Yeah, or maybe Jason Kilar, Jason Killer. He's the CEO of Warner Media.
That's great.
He's the invisible hand.
It's possible that maybe AT&T would deal Warner Media would spin it off, so that maybe it would be the Warner Media CEO. Mm. Who knows?
So Kyle R's kicked in the forbidden door.
If you want to get a headache really quick, just look at the ownership of Hulu over the last 3 years.
Mm. Yeah.
Between, you know, who bought what and when, between AT&T and Comcast and Fox was involved and now Disney. I'm wondering, too, if we might know more about NBC Universal's interest in going forward where they want once the NXT TV deal comes up here in a few months.
Mm.
And that's still, you know, that's still a little bit up in the air. Like, is it just going to continue where it's at? You know, they'll have what a good... around, they're thinking, what, September, October is when that comes up, Brennan?
Yeah, I strongly believe it expires in September of mm-hmm. this year. There was some talk on the call, because as people may know, the NBC Sports Network is folding at right. the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk is that, you know, well, that is obviously owned by NBC Universal, and all that sports content has got to go someplace else. And a lot of it is going to go to the USA Network. Maybe some of it is going to go to Peacock. But one would think that, you know, they've got the NHL on NBC Sports Network, and the NHL yep. has a big night on Wednesday night hockey. And maybe that would take the spot of NXT on the USA Network. But Nick Khan was pretty definitive in his answer, because he was asked about it on the conference call. And he said that the, you know, NBC Sports Network, their content moving will have no effect on Raw or NXT. So he must have gotten some reassurance from people at NBC Universal that that's not going to affect NXT, at least in the near future. I would expect that the NXT is going to stay on the USA Network and probably stay on Wednesday night. You know, they could move it to another night where it would probably do better viewership, because it wouldn't be going head to head with AEW, which consistently beats it in total and 18 to 49 viewership. But No, I think it's, who knows, it's a way for USA Network and for NBCU to compete with TNT, which they probably see as valuable.
And before we go too, like, you know, I've been, as we've been talking, I have this wonderful PDF file that I purchased from you, the Pro Wrestling Industry Report, full year 2020.
Thank you. Now at Payhip for $6.
Yeah, and it was well worth every penny. So, you know, I want to talk a little bit about that, make sure the plug's out there, but I also don't want to give any spoilers, because it is amazing. I'm already on my second time through it today. I read it when it came out, and going through it again kind of helped prep me, you know, to talk to you today. And we talk a lot about WWE, and I think it's a little bit hard to talk about AEW just because it's been around just for a couple of years. So there's not much to compare it to over time. So I'm wondering if you have any, like, you know, kind of nuggets about something like a New Japan or an Impact Wrestling or a Ring of Honor. Like, you know, New Japan had a really tough year last year without able to do live events from like February, and I'm just guessing here, but to like, you know, kind of G1, where they slowly started letting people in. And they're a live event company because they don't, their TV deals are not like they are here. Looking forward ahead to a place like New Japan, and then to a lesser extent too, like Ring of Honor, you know, television company, but not running live events. Impact, not running live events. Like, is there anything on, you know, the cusp of them that, you know, they might be able to come out of this okay?
Well, we'll go through AEW. Yeah, what's that?
I go through all the promotions at one time and expect you to answer.
No.
He gives you an essay question. That's what Steve does.
That's all good. So we'll go through AEW, New Japan, Impact, and Ring of Honor. So I don't know. AEW, I'm kind of optimistic about, but it's not totally clear. I've been thinking about this lately. Like, in terms of the content, what's the quality of the content? And does this content show the potential for growth? So I did a net promoter score, which is in the report.
Yep.
And the net promoter score is, maybe it's a thing that people are familiar with in other businesses. It's I won't get into the formula, but it basically shows it's the net promoter score is supposed to show how it's supposed to show potential for whether a company has potential for growth. and how the customers feel about the product. So AEW had the strongest Net Promoter Score in the study that I did, which, by the way, was a result of a survey that I didn't just distribute. I did not, in fact, at all distribute on my own personal social media and, like, you know, get responses that were nothing but an echo chamber, but which I have done in the past. And I felt that the results were an echo chamber, and or that they could at least, you know, plausibly be an echo chamber. So what I did was I took a Facebook ad out, and I got 500 responses through a Facebook ad, which were hopefully more random than you would get by just organically sharing a survey. So, but anyway, what I found was AEW, by a pretty wide margin, has the strongest Net Promoter Score, followed by all three WWE programs, which are actually still positive, as negative as some people, maybe including me, could be about the quality of the content. New Japan is slightly positive, and then Ring of Honor and Impact are negative. So there's that. So anyway, we're talking about AEW, though. I think AEW, more than any of the other brands below WWE, have shown that they're able to capture the media rights fees that are so valuable in this environment. AEW's TV deal is a fraction of what what Raw or SmackDown are worth.
Right.
$44 million is the average annual value of the AEW TV deal on TNT. Compare that to $205 million average annual value for SmackDown. Raw is even a little bit more, but let's compare to two-hour programs, even though they're supposed to do a third hour of some other show for AEW somewhere in the Turner universe. Who knows when that will come out, supposedly this year. But so it's a fraction of what WWE gets for their TV rights value. I think they're in a position right now, it's a, you know, a couple years away yet before a deal gets done, but I think they're in a good position now to probably multiply that value in the next round. Their revenue is somewhere around 62 or 63 million, I think I estimated, which is still a small fraction of what WWE generated. WWE generated almost $1 billion. But that is probably more than New Japan generated in its year at the same time. So AEW, I think in terms of revenue generator, is clearly the number two company in the world. I think the quality of the content, if we invent a scale, which this will be controversial, but if I invented a scale and said, you know, this is the quality of the content over time in terms of economic value, how effective was the creative at the time. And if we say WCW in 2000 was a zero, and Gato in 2015 is a 10, and Vince in the Attitude Era is a 10, then I think AEW is probably somewhere around a 6 or a 7 maybe right now. So I don't think they're, like, you know, ready to cultivate a lot of new stars. I don't see an Okada there who's going to, you know, pump a lot of life into this company. Not to say that there might not be one yet to emerge, but I think they have some hope. So I don't know if they're profitable. That's the question that everybody wants to ask me, is AEW profitable now? I don't know. It's probably close in year one here. They were hurt probably by not being able to run events. They probably also saved expenses by running at Daly's place and doing these, you know, sort of consolidated tapings. But I don't know if they're profitable. I would guess it's close one way or the other. I think they're probably in a good position to be profitable in the next few years, because their TV rights deals, I believe, are have escalators in them as well. So that should assure them more revenue over time. And they still have some regions throughout the world to break into. They still have no deal TV deal in India, which is WWE's number two TV rights region. So I think AEW is interesting, and I think it threatens to compete with WWE for its market share over time. I think WWE is going to continue to be healthy and, you know, make a lot of money over time. They'll probably even get an upgrade in their next round of TV rights deals in the U.S., I believe, if I were to guess here today. Even though a lot of things can change between now and 2023, I think WWE will probably still get an increase in their TV rights fees. But I do see over time AEW continuing to compete with them for market share and name ID in the wrestling world, even though AEW is multiples below where WWE is in terms of those things. So that's AEW. New Japan Pro Wrestling, I think, has the strongest product probably in the world. And in terms of, I think my impression is that the product is, and the content has suffered over the last year. It's not as good, not just because of the lack of an audience, but I don't know, some of the reactions I hear and the sentiments I hear about how, you know, evil as champion went and things like that.
Yeah, wait until the second half when I review the two shows from this week.
And that's a critical thing, but I think there is something to be said about the quality of the content and how much it engages people and engages emotions. But I think Gato has had an amazing run as Booker. I think there's basically one pro wrestling company over the last 10 or 20 years, maybe. Well, let's say 10. Let's be careful. There's basically one pro wrestling company on any major scale that I can think of that has really grown its popularity and really developed stars, and that's New Japan. And that's with the creative direction, as we would call it, of Gato, who's been the booker and developed stars, most importantly, Okada. They kind of inherited Tanahashi as well, but they've done a really great job and have salvaged this company that was, basically not profitable to being quite profitable and to having growing revenues. As Steve kind of mentioned, the one great difference between New Japan and the other companies that we're talking about here is that New Japan is still a live events business. The other companies are media businesses. By that, I mean they get the majority of their value from selling their TV programs or selling video in some other form or selling pay-per-view even or selling a streaming service. New Japan still makes the majority of their revenue from ticket sales, at least in non-pandemic times. They've done a good job of increasing their ticket sales over time, year over year. They've done really well. Even if you took the 9 or the 12 months before the pandemic and compared that to the months that were before that, of the same amount of time, New Japan was still growing their attendance, both in terms of average and total attendance. So looked like they were doing good until the pandemic struck. That said, New Japan has a strategy to go global and to break into the U.S. market. First of all, they've been hurt by the acquisition of talent like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, who jumped over to AEW. There's been a noticeable decline in interest in the U.S., at least in terms of Google web search. There's been they lost their TV deal with Access, which was apparently a part of some political struggle between themselves and Impact Wrestling, because Anthem, the parent company of Impact, acquired Access TV and I think sort of gave them an ultimatum that they can work with Impact or they can be off the network, and they chose to be off the network. But now New Japan is on the Roku channel, which is better than nothing, but I'm not that impressed with it. They're probably getting some revenue for it, but I don't see Roku. And I don't know. There was a Roku earnings call this afternoon, apparently, and there was some optimistic news about how much people in general are using Roku. But we'll see if maybe it'll develop into this big thing. But I think New Japan Pro Wrestling is not really well equipped to execute the global strategy that it seems to want to execute. I don't know all the ins and outs and the details of like what Harold May was supposed to do and why he left in October. But maybe he was somebody who was supposed to help them execute their global strategy, but it didn't really work out. I think New Japan understands that there is a huge opportunity to get to extract media revenue in Western markets, but I don't think that they are willing to invest the money or execute the strategy that would allow them to do that. I'm sort of fatalistic here on the rest of these. I think that New Japan is going to be what it is right now, and I don't see a ton of at least global growth for them. They'll probably continue to be at least decent, good in Japan, but I don't have a ton of optimism for their continued growth throughout the rest of the world. Okay, I think that's New Japan. This is going quite long. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. It's okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
Impact Wrestling. Yes. I'm going to have this transcribed later, and we're going to turn it into a novel. Impact Wrestling.
It's going to be your next PDF. Just
right. Listen, I'm a therapist, right? I ask one question, the person just starts talking for 45 minutes, and then I get a check from the insurance company. This is my life.
Impact Wrestling is doing better than what it was. I think Impact Wrestling over the long course of time is this brand that has had its brand value tremendously damaged over time. But it's doing better in recent years, right? So especially since it rebranded away from the TNA trade name and now using the Impact trade name. They were acquired by Anthem, so they seem to have a fairly strong parent company behind them that has bought a television network that they are on, and there's probably no sign of them moving away from that network. Recently, they're doing really well in viewership, you know, relatively speaking. They do viewership that is a fraction of what NXT or AEW do, or the WWE flagships for that matter. But their viewership is growing, and they're really benefiting from this relationship with AEW, apparently. I don't know what's in it for AEW, but other than the affirmation of the friendship of Kenny Omega and Don Callis. But Impact is I don't see it keep growing very much, but there's an opportunity here for them to make the best of this rub that they're getting from AEW. So that's good for them. I don't see their brand growing in popularity tremendously anytime soon. Ring of Honor, which is owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, which puts Ring of Honor throughout all these local stations that they own all throughout the country, and some of the over-the-air networks like Stadium and Challenge, or is it Comet? Maybe it's both. I don't know. Nobody really watches it.
No, they have like a Pluto type app now too for Sinclair. And Ring of Honor is on there as well.
Its logo is in the table called Media Landscape, mm-hmm. but I can't tell you off the top of my head what it is. I think it begins with an F or something. But anyway, so Ring of Honor, I think I don't think there's really any ambition, or I don't think there's a ton of vision for Ring of Honor to grow beyond what it is. I don't think Sinclair wants to invest and take the risk. I think they see Ring of Honor as this probably stable business that maybe in some years even made them money or was a very low expense. That it gives them content. It gives them content to fill their stations with, and they're happy to own this company that provides that rather than having to pay for more expensive production for some other show. So I think they're happy to have it. I don't think they want to or have the management in place to grow it beyond what it is. I think Ring of Honor's brand value and momentum has diminished tremendously since the last couple of years. It's hard to measure time now with COVID. Yes. It's maybe 2018 or 2019. I think it was a great example of this is the Madison Square Garden show, which, you know, by the time it happened, Ring of Honor was just sort of a sidekick to New Japan.
Pretty much. I was there. That's exactly how it felt.
Yeah.
So,
and, there's something to, New Japan was really kind of a Trojan horse, I think, to Ring of Honor in the U.S. Like, New Japan really benefited from that relationship. Ring of Honor benefited from it too in the short term, but New Japan really benefited from having, Ring of Honor sort of elevate their visibility to U.S. wrestling fans. I think, to go back to New Japan, I think New Japan still has the capability to like sell out a Madison Square Garden on one weekend, but I don't think that they have the capability to run all of these live events like they probably want to run. And they're probably not going to draw more than a couple hundred people if they run a ton of them. But anyway, that's where I see Ring of Honor. I think they're going to be what they are, and their name value is really, I think, still their name value or their name ID is still below that of Impact. Impact is just still benefited from this long legacy that it has, which is actually not any longer than Ring of Honor's legacy, but Impact spent all those years on Spike TV, which had enormous coverage in the U.S. and cable homes. So I think that's it. I think I'm done.
Brandon's not coming back till August, so still can get another New Testament. I will say this before we let you go, Brandon. We were talking about streams, and, we have Peacock, we have HBO Max. We have Disney Plus. Another one is debuting very soon, and that is Paramount Plus, which is pretty much CBS's toe dip in the stream. And that might be something that will be looked at down the line. Another
CBS All Access. CBS All Access is just being rebranded to Paramount Plus. Am I wrong?
Yes, but they are. I work with CBS pretty intimately, so they are going to have a lot more soccer, a lot more, and it's going to be treated more like an HBO Max or even like a Peacock. I think the fiscal structure will change a little bit. And I think you're going to be able to get some NFL too. So it's going to be a little different. And the archive is going to be huge because Paramount's one, not to go off the nerd trail, but Paramount owns pretty much the entire Star Trek franchise. All five shows, all the movies, or not five shows, now it's what, nine? And all the movies and everything. So that's kind of their thing they're leaning on. And there are a possibility down the line of wanting some content like that. And if they see, you know, mergers with NBC and HBO Max and all this other, you know, or Warner and whatever thing, maybe they may dip their toe in the waters. Because I've said all along to Nate and Steve here on the show that somebody needs to take over New Japan World because the content is amazing, but the interface is crap. And I think somebody needs to go in there. We talked about it, Steve.
Oh yeah.
The content is, I don't know if you've seen New Japan World, Brandon, but
I'm day one subscriber.
Yeah. So right, the content kicks ass, but the interface, let's be honest, is not great.
And they have no device presence.
They really don't have a device presence.
I understand you can get it on Amazon Fire Stick. Yes. And I've been told the reason why that is, and that's the only device. So it's no Roku, no Apple TV, no smart TVs, no consoles, no game consoles. And I understand the reason that is because Amazon Fire Stick is relatively popular in Japan, but the others are not. And it just, I don't know. It makes no sense why they're not, you know, it's such an impediment to their, you know, ability to capture people globally.
It was, I had a little bit of an excitement because I think, you know, our buddy Kevin Kelly, who's been on with us many, many times, I don't think he quite understood the Roku deal. Because he was trying to explain it this past week, you know, they're talking about, hey, you can on NJPW World, you can watch the AEW Dynamite match with Omega and Kenta, and then was talking about the Roku show that you had brought up, and he's like, yeah, you could watch it on your Roku now, and I'm like, oh, I could watch NJPW World on my Roku in addition, and like this is a bigger deal than it actually is just this one like show. No, there's no Roku app yet for it.
You can watch Wrestle Kingdom of 2020 on Roku. That's what you can do.
Yeah, it is basically the exact same idea of the original NJPW show on Access, where they're showing you old matches with the original one on Access, they'd have an interview with each of the people looking back at the match, and that was it. Kevin Kelly like running past. I didn't watch the whole thing. I just was wondering about the presentation, and yeah, I think if Kevin's having a hard time understanding it, you and me are going to have a hard time figuring out the whole thing. So and we're diehards. So yeah. How is, you know, the everyday wrestling fan going to be able to navigate that?
It's tremendous friction. They've done a great job of getting English commentary on there, and you know, having Kevin Kelly and Rocky Romero and Chris Charlton there live at times doing commentary. I think they've done a great job, but yeah, there's a ton of friction to making NJPW World work and making it easy to access.
Right. Brandon, it's been great. Before Steve makes you stay here till 3 a.m, it has been awesome. Thank you. Before you have to figure out pie, where can everybody find you?
You can find my written work at WrestleNomics.com, where it is there ad-free written articles. I got some analysis. I got a story about the employees getting their raises and promotions cut or put on hold. You can be a patron at patreon.com/WrestleMonks, where you'll get access to a lot of unlocked posts. You'll get access to a massive wrestling viewership spreadsheet that I update almost daily. You will get access to the PDF, the WrestleMonks Pro Wrestling Industry Report 2020. That is a post for patrons, or you can buy that report for $6. You can be a patron for $5, or for $6, you can just buy the PDF on PayHip. The link is pinned to the top of the WrestleMonics Twitter account, which is at WrestleMonics. My personal Twitter is at Brandon Thurston, and I think that's... Oh, I have a podcast, too, called WrestleMonics Radio, which you can find in your podcast app by searching for WrestleMonics, and it drops every Sunday night, usually, or so.
I just made an announcement here for you, Brandon, that for $10 on your Patreon, Steve will read you the pro wrestling, your Steve will read it and like a lullaby. So,
hey, kids like me reading. I'll do it.
Matt Rotella has said to me, Steve, that you could read the phone book and put his kids to sleep. So there you go.
Well, that's sweet, I think.
Yeah, it is. Matt Rotella's complimenting anybody is good enough. So, Brandon, always a pleasure. We'll have you back soon. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy Elimination Chamber. And let's see. The first quarter ends.
May would be the next one.
Yeah, May would be the next call. Well, we'll have you on before that. We'll probably have you on after Mania. We'll have you on after Mania. Yeah, we'll have you on after Mania when things kind of settle down. Let us know what you thought of stuff, what you heard through the grapevine, etc. And see how. And actually, after Mania, probably be a good discussion because Peacock would have been what, about a month old at that point, or 3 or 4 weeks old at that point.
That's true.
Because it comes to you had mentioned March 21st, which is also the day of Fastlane, which is the last. Right. Sorry, Steve. Fastlane. So, which is the last pay-per-view before Mania. So it'll probably be about a month at that point. So it'll be good. We'll get some. Maybe we'll get some numbers and see how the Peacock migrating is doing, because I'm a little nervous, as everyone knows about me migrating subscriptions to other stuff that what happens. But I'm praying that things go smooth. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, Brandon, about the WWE Network subscriptions migrating successfully into Peacock. And see what kind of hopefully a shit show that's not. So,
yeah.
Brandon Thurston, everybody. Brandon, always a pleasure. Thank you. Guys, tremendous first segment as always.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we have a lot to talk about here in the B block. But of course, it is now Sunday since Steve's question made Brandon answer us for the last 3 days. But that's quite all right. Probably longer than the conference call, Steve. But no, great job, Steve, and great job by Brandon. Brandon Thurston's always the best, and so hopefully he'll join us, guys. Hopefully, mid-April, he'll be back on after Mania and see, you know, what he heard through his business contacts. But before we dive into anything else, let's do some business of our own. And of course, we always begin with Brother Nate. What is going on over on the Kings of Sport Patreon? It's always busy. Football's over, but we got spring training starting. NBA, NHL kicking in. What do we got going on over on the Patreon?
Yes, you know, while you're on Patreon, showing Brandon some love, you can check out the Kings of Sport Patreon, myself and Marcus Vandenberg. New episode dropped on the Patreon today, talking about fallout from the Super Bowl, the NFL comings and goings. We talk a little NBA, and of course, we talk about the biggest story in professional wrestling this week, Steve Willie. Lil Bow Wow.
Yes.
So that's what's up right now, the newest thing we've dropped on the Patreon. But in addition to that, you can catch all the episodes of TDT Talks. Season 1 is in the books. Season 2 has been greenlit. We just haven't dropped our first episode of Season 2 yet, but that should be coming in the future. There's the 2020, our political show. We've got MCU reviews up. We'll probably do something for WandaVision once that show is completed. And we can talk about all the mysteries and the twists and turns of Westview and what's going on with that show. In addition to that, there's a Hamilton review. There's over 100 hours of audio and video for the people out there, featuring not only the work of myself and Marcus, but people like Steve Willey, people like Jennifer Smith, that you folks out there might be familiar with, people like John Pollock and Wei Ting of Post Wrestling. So there's a lot of people. Scotty has been on the Patreon as a member of the Chain Gang with the Chain Reaction. So there's a lot of different shows, wrestling, entertainment, pop culture, politics. We got it all for you on the Patreon. Patreon.com/TheKingsOfSport. $5 gets you in the door. But if you want to pay more to hear Steve Willey read the phone book to you, we won't stop you.
I think there should be a PDF oral history of Nate's high school football career read by Steve Willey. I think that would be fantastic.
I've not been on the conference call. I stepped out. I heard that Vince McMahon does that. Did I miss anything?
Yes.
I just asked a question and left for a while.
Yes, Brandon said that Sting was single-handedly making AEW profitable. I think that's what he said.
He did. He did. And he said that Roman Reigns is going to own HBO Max. Or so he's the chief of HBO Max, or something of that nature. Anyway, Kick to Sport Patreon, everybody. Nate and I are, Steve and I are sponsors. We get the seat with the velvet ropes. Give a little bit, and you got some great content there also. Join us over on the PTB Wrestling Network, of which these two fine gentlemen are on, besides this awesome show. We got some great shows this week. Busy week this week. Talking WCW came back. Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips talked about Lord Steven Regal.
Oh, my God.
Matches in WCW. So check that out, Talking WCW. Speaking of GWCW ballots, of course, we're working on one here on the main event, and more on that in the coming episodes. Of course, Dr. G and I over on the NWA Saturday special, we're counting hours down. This weekend, we'll be counting down numbers 40 to 31, so we're getting to the good stuff. And Tyler Kelly and Jacob Williams, Jambalaya Jake, are counting theirs down. So they had a premiere episode this week. They counted out their first 10 matches, 100 to 91. So check that out as well. Get your ballot out. See if things match up. Neil Trauma, Dave Thakara, back for episode 2 of Chronology, a show-by-show walkthrough of Monday Night Raw. Marty Sleaze, episode 12 of Pro Wrestling Love, him and Matt, for part 2 of their top shoot-style matches of all time. And episode 9, Wrestling's Chicken Salad, Ben Locke and his gang break down the infamous of infamous in pay-per-view history, No Way Out 2003. Who wants more oiled-up Triple H and Scott Steiner? Other than me. These guys do. Check out the newest episode of Wrestling's Chicken Salad. Rate, review, and subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. Just search Place to Be Wrestling Network. Of course, we have the quad of pods. So let's talk about the other feeds. Of course, the PTB Pop Experience. All about pop culture, best in TV, movies, comics, trivia shows, so much more. Jennifer Smith and the Jenny Position. Her unique takes on pop culture and life. Her feed's loaded with great shows, movies, books, Marvel, and more. And then, of course, my PSE, Mr. Rosero, Aaron George, Chad Campbell, the North-South Connection feed. Glenny Bunn. Never get to talk enough about Glenny Bunn. Glenn Butler and his brother Scott continuing their spectacular journey through music, films, and more. They have their own podcast feed, the Non-Toxic Fanboys pod. They try to enjoy the things they love. Find them at Non-Toxic Fanboys on Twitter and nontoxicfanboys.com, and subscribe wherever you get your pods. Join the Rejuvenated Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, look up Place to Be, request an invite. Discussions, fun, abound. And our 2021 Spretch. You like that? Spretch. Steve, was there any Spretches in Brandon's report?
Stretch.
No. That's the guy's name, right? John Spretch? John Spretch is on Dynamite.
Sprecher Root Beer and Sprecher Beer, big in Milwaukee.
That's right. Our 2021 Stretch, if I could talk, project. This year, the greatest NWA WCW wrestler of all time. So go to facebook.com/GWCW matches. It still says matches, but that's what we're doing them. We have there are nominations up there and discuss. Yes, I know everyone says this guy is number one, but you have to fill 99 other slots. Who's two? Who's three? I bet you Nate's number one is different from everybody else's. I'm putting money on the table for that right now. Guaranteed. Nate's number one is different than everybody else's. Guaranteed.
Disco fever. Disco fever.
I was thinking more going a little more southern and thinking some Lash LaRue, maybe.
I like Lash LaRue.
I mean, it's about time, Steve Willard, that somebody put some respect on Ranger Ross's name.
Yeah, right, seriously.
Ranger Ross.
My entire top 10 is going to be military WCW and NWA characters.
Sergeant Craig Pittman.
Anyway, go to Facebook.com.
Cobra.
Oh, man. Anyway, go to Facebook.com/GWCW matches. We'll fix the title and get all your great stuff. Go to PlaceToBeNation.com, all the great stuff there. Don't forget, PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. Click on the banner, and a little bit comes back our way to help work the site. So there we go. All the great stuff all around the internet world. All right, let's dive in. A lot of recaps to do. We will begin with the first new beginning, Steve.
Yes.
New beginning in Nagoya, which took place back on January 30th.
I think we covered that.
Did we talk about that one? Oh, yeah. Tanahashi won the never open weight. You're right.
Yeah.
You can skip that. Okay. Let's see. The next one. Did we do this one? No, we didn't. The new beginning in Hiroshima took place two nights on February 10th and 11th, so this past weekend. Here are the results. Steve, either jump in or jump out the window, however you like. Oh, my God. There's like 67 tag team matches. I'm stunned.
Yeah. Why don't you go through the results of both nights, and then I'll give some thoughts, recommendations, and whatnot.
Okay, that's because you just want you want to hear me do the names again, don't you?
All right, I set you right up, and you landed the joke.
I did. All right, night one, we had a 6-man tag, the first of like 8 I'm going to mention. Suzuki Gun, Minoru Suzuki, El Desperado, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru defeated Yota Tsuji, Yuya Yamura, and Gabriel Kidd by referee stoppage. By the way, that is, I don't know, the night two had a bunch of short matches, okay. This is the only match on this night that was less than 10 minutes. Bushi defeated Master Wato. Every time I hear Master Wato, I think of, again, what's his name? Wato that owned Shmi Skywalker in The Phantom Menace. Every time I see Master Wato. But anyway, 10-man tag. You had to talk about this one, Steve. 10-man tag. Chaos, Okada, Yano, Goto, Ishii, Yoshihashi. Against defeat of the Bullet Club, Jay White, Evil, Takahashi, Ishimori, and El Fantasmo in 1208. Los Ignorables de Japón defeated Ibushi and Hanma in a straight up tag that went 1102. Steve, any thoughts on that one?
That was really just there. There were two things going on there, setting up Ibushi and Sanada night two, and for some reason Naito after New Year's Dash has had this thing with Hanma, who's very old at this point and on the last leg of his career. He's underdog. So his deal with Hanma is that he'll beat him with like a Destino, and then he'll want to like pin him for like 29 seconds. So just like just to humiliate him is essentially what it is. I don't know what they're going for out of that. Is just like, yeah, let's humiliate Honma, like as he gets to the end of his career, like establish Naito as more of a heel. I don't understand it, but that's all that's going on there. Okay. Naito is kind of in a holding pattern right now, I'd say.
Okay. All right. Next up, the GOD. We had a tag title match here. The IWGP tag titles on the line. The GOD, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, defeated Taichi and Zack Sabre, the Techers, by DQ in 29:08. Shit, really? Wow. A 29-minute tag team title match.
Yes.
Yes, it was a thing. It was a thing that took 29 minutes.
I could, if you want me to break it down, it's an interesting one.
Okay, that's okay. Anyway, Guerrillas of Destiny retain their tag titles by DQ. And in the main event of night one for the junior heavyweight title, Takahashi defeated Sho in 35:38.
This is the match on the show that you want to go out of your way and see. Okay. Not spectacular, but very, very, very good. Yeah. And you know, sometimes you can The 29:08 tag team title match felt like 29:08. It was, but this did not feel like 35 minutes. It was really enjoyable. I would say this match and then the main event of the second night, as you will talk about shortly. But yeah, Takahashi has been trying to push for the junior heavyweight title to be in the main event on shows. And so with this two-night show, they were able to do that. And so he's pushing to do that at the Tokyo Dome as well, since that will be a two-night show. So he's already thinking long-term that he wants to. And he's one of the bigger stars, I'd say, in New Japan right now. Definitely the top five, even though he's a junior.
Mm. So he main events night one and retains his title. Night two, we start with three straight six-man tags. Jesus, this roster's gigantic. Mm. All right, we have Suzuki Gun, Taichi, Zack Sabre, and Dookie.
I call him Dookie. Dookie. Yeah, Dookie. Dookie's
funny. Defeats Yota Tsuji, Yomara, and Gabriel Kidd by submission. Poor Gabriel Kidd. Damn it. Two nights in a row, and two nights in a row we lose. Oh, actually, that whole team lost two nights in a row.
Yeah, so the young boys.
Yeah, that's rough. Another six-man tag, Tomoaki Honma, Sho, and Master Wado, for Shmi Skywalker's honor, defeats Suzuki Gun, who won the other night in another six-man tag. Los Ignorables Diapon, so Naito, Takahashi, and Bushi defeated the other Takahashi, Ishimori, and El Fantasmo. So Hiromu is in Los Ignorables Diapon, and Yuhiro is in Bullet Club, the two Takahashis. Chaos, Okada and Yano versus Bullet Club, Evil and Togo, ended in a double countout. And that match only went 90 seconds. What the hell happened?
This is the bizarre part of the weekend, is that there were more DQs in this weekend than usually are in 6 months of major shows for New Japan.
I'm looking at this and I'm thinking that's weird, right?
Yeah, it was very weird. The story, and then right after that, Okada challenged Evil to a match. The story there being that Evil is trying to avoid Okada in a one-on-one match. So basically they did a double count out on purpose. Evil, like held the chair on Okada, so they didn't have to fight anymore. Okada goaded Evil into the ring, and then it was just kind of a Bullet Club interference led to the DQ. Yeah. But that will lead to a singles match at the next group of shows called Castle Attack, which is a pretty cool name in my opinion.
Sounds like a anime show.
Yes.
It's like Attack on Titan. Castle Attack. All right. So next we have an Okada and Evil wrestled, as you said, by and Okada won by DQ.
Yeah, a nothing match.
A nothing match in just under 6 minutes. All right, the two big ones. Chaos, Ishii, Goto, and Yoshihashi defeated Jay White and the Gorillas of Destiny in a six-man tag for the never open weight six-man tag team titles. The match was 27:01. Anything there?
It's mainly setting up the Tama Tonga and Tangaloa were going for double gold to get the open weight six-man titles, which are really unimportant. it's like a step up from the 24/7 title, to be honest. But they're working towards Jay White versus Tomohiro Ishii, which will be a really fun match. Really showing like a tougher side of Goto, Ishii, and Yoshihashi. Yoshihashi's kind of perennial underdog type guy, not very well liked. But they're showing a little bit, I wouldn't say heelish, but more like standing up to the Evil Bullet Club. It was a match that went very long. It was one of the longest six-man tag title matches they've ever had. And not necessarily think that it needed that much. Jay White's looking great. Tangaloa looking really good. So that was really, I would say if you want to break this whole weekend down, there's three tiers, I think. Number one, if you want to just get the best matches, watch the main event, Ibushi and Sonata. And on night one, watch Takahashi and Sho. You will love it. If you want to watch a couple more matches, then do the second from the top for each, the six-man and the tag match. Mm-hmm. My other recommendation for kind of an under-the-radar one was the opener from night one with the young boys versus Suzuki Gun. If you want to see Minoru Suzuki just beat the shit out of a young boy, and the story is Yumemura is trying to like step up to Suzuki and show that he has what it takes to make this next step in his career. And right. Suzuki is just such a prick, and you know, goading him on, and like Yumemura will throw like 10 forearms in, and then Suzuki will just knock him out with one. It was great fun.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, but the rest of the shows you can honestly skip. It was a little bit disappointing, but I feel like Castle Attack is going to be better. There are going to be a lot more singles matches.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, Ibushi defeats Sonata, and that match was just under 28 minutes, 27:51.
It was a really good match, not as good as their G1 final, but you know, anytime you put Kota Ibushi in, the best. Could have been the best part of it, but they had some audio issues. Zack Sabre Jr., who is an amazing promo, did commentary with Kevin on this match. And unfortunately, the audio mix just wasn't right. It was hard to hear. But my favorite, I wrote this down, but I don't have my notes in front of me, but I memorized it because it was just so great. You know, it's the first time ZSJ was commentating, so Kevin was kind of leading him around, you know, kind of asking open-ended questions and stuff. And so as Sonata's coming to the ring, he's like, you know, what do you think of Sonata's performance over the last year or so? And he's like, Kevin, and I'm not going to do his accent, but, you know, Sonata, I feel like he's gotten a lot better since he stopped wearing all those dickish pirate clothes. But he's a lot better now, but he still dresses like a twat.
We need more of that.
Sounds like God, it was so good.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, anyway, the third set of shows haven't even happened yet because they'll be this is the ones here on this side of the pond. Actually, is back to back Fridays. If you're listening to this today, it's tonight. El Fantasmo's facing Leo Rush in the main event, and then next Friday night, the 26th, is finally that fucking overrated pile of hot shit. John Dean Ambrose will finally drop the U.S. title to Kenta, and then we can not deal with that crap anymore. If he wins that match or it ends in a schmoz, I give up.
No, I don't think there's any way. I don't even know if there's any way to have a schmoz. There's not many people in those shows. I'm sure this was taped.
Yeah.
This is probably taped weeks ago.
Yeah. So anyway, that's next week. Thank you, Steve. Nice job. So Castle Attack is
27th and the 28th.
Yes, of there it is. There's Road to Castle Attack coming up. That's 27th, 28th in Osaka. Just a quick run through the matches, very quick. Night one, Tanahashi, Tenkozy, which is Tenzan and Kojima against United Empire, Will, Great O'Conn, and Cobb. Ooh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah,
that sounds like fun, Steve.
Will's doing a great gimmick now with his empire where he's tired of all the old people. And he's like, he's tired of the old people who've been holding down the young people. So he just wants to beat the shit out of all of like the old 50-year-olds.
Maybe he should have been in the Rumble. Well, he would have taken out like 28 of the 30 guys, but Yoshihashi will face Tangaloa. Hiroki Goto will face Tama Tonga. Toriyano will face Chase Owens in a Texas strap match. Or a YTR style Texas strap match.
Who knows?
Whatever the fuck that is. Yeah. For the provisional KOPW trophy that he won. Tomohiro Ishii will take on Jay White. And as you said, Okada and Evil main event night one. Night two, Tenkozy and United Empire in a tag. So it'll be Tenzan and Kojima against Ospreay and Cobb. Another match I think I want to watch. Six man, because you got to have one. Chaos, so Okada, Ishii, and Yano against Jay White, Evil, and Chase Owens. So that makes sense. The tag titles are on the line. G.O.D. takes on Chaos. That's interesting. Tanahashi will defend the Never Open Weight belt against Great O'Conn. Takahashi will defend the Junior Heavyweight title against El Fantasmo. And the main event of Night 2, Ibushi and Naito for just the IC belt.
Yeah, that was an interesting. And Naito does not want Ibushi to combine the titles into one, which Ibushi wants to unify them. So Naito challenged just for the Intercontinental belt. This Castle Attack is a new event this year. Mm-hmm. A New Beginning is usually has some decent matches on it. But I think they brought that back. As I mean, these are two pretty solid cards. A lot more single matches, a lot more title matches. And then that will head into the anniversary show and the New Japan Cup, which is the single elimination tournament that they do each year.
Right, right. So there's our New Japan stuff. Very good job, Steve. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk about those two shows on our next show. All right. Also this past weekend, Saturday night was No Surrender on Impact Plus. I'm enjoying my 6 free months. And you guys are too. Quick recap. Let's see. Decay, which is Black Taurus, Crazy Steve, and Rosemary, defeated Triple XL and Tennille Dashwood, of course, Emma, in a 6-person. Brian Myers and Hernandez defeated Eddie Edwards and Matt Cardona. We all know who they are, in a tag. Jake Something defeated Diener in a singles. Josh Alexander defeated Ace Austin, Blake Christian, Chris Bay, Daivari, Suicide, Trey Miguel, and Willie Mack in a triple threat revolver to determine the number one contender for the X Division title. What the fuck is a triple threat revolver? Good Lord. Nate, what's a triple threat revolver? I mean, is this like... Is it like Russian roulette? I mean,
it sounds a lot like YTR rules to me, Steve Willie.
Yes. Yes.
I'm ready to explain this. So it's like a gauntlet triple threat match where you start off with three, and once one person is eliminated, the next person comes in until you have one person left. Yeah, I don't think they've ever done that before.
Well, I'll have to watch it. I had to work out some stuff over the weekend, but with this thing that, you know. Yes, it's finally over, though. Everything's fine. And so I think I'm going to watch this show this week because I have to take a look at it. Fire and Flava, which is what Nate and Steve call themselves when they hit the town, although there's nowhere to go, but that's what they are. They're Fire and Flava. I know it's a women's tag team, but I think you guys could play it very well. Kira Hogan and Tasha Steeles defeated Hawk, Havoc. Be nice if I put my glasses on. Well, Havoc and Nevaeh in a Texas Tornado, no disqualification. Jesus Christ. Texas Tornado, no disqualification match for the Knockouts tag team titles. TJP defeated Raju to retain his X Division title. Of course, TJP, a Cruiserweight alum. Jordan Grace, Jazz, and ODB defeated Deonna Purrazzo, Kimberly, and Susan in a 6-knockout tag match by submission. Here's our crossover match. The Good Brothers defeated Chris Sabin and James Storm and Private Party to retain their world tag team titles. And in the main event, Rich Swann defeated Tommy Dreamer to retain the Impact world title. So, any thoughts, Nate? Just on the results, anything strike you?
I think Impact is really interesting right now. I think that, you know, we were all talking for the last couple months, you know, what the involvement would be in regards to AEW. Would we see a lot of crossover, or would it just kind of be surface level? But I think that whatever kind of initial interest there was for Impact from the casuals, if you will. Because I remember that first night when Callis and Omega showed up. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd never seen that many people talking about Impact at one time. So I think that was a good night for Impact. But I don't know how much they've retained of that audience. But in terms of this card in particular, I didn't get a chance to see it, but I am kind of interested in looking at, let's see, which matches would I, like the women's matches are always good. Mm-hmm. The Decay stuff really hadn't been working for me lately, which is weird because I like Rosemary a lot, but the Decay stuff really hadn't hit. The less Matt Cardona, the better Steve Willie from for me.
God.
But I am interested in I'm definitely gonna check out the X Division match just because there's so much talent in that match. Particularly
yeah, there
when
is.
Talk about you know, Willie Mack and Trey Miguel. It's good to see Trey Miguel back. Mm-hmm. Chris Bay is a star waiting to happen. So I definitely check that match out. TJP and Rohit Raju should be a good match. They've always got good chemistry. And I'll probably check out the main event and then the six-woman tag match because I don't know why, Steve. Like, it's dumb, this Susan character. But there's something there. Like, she's like the female Joseph Parks, and I was always a fan of the Joseph Parks shtick. So I'll probably check out that match as well.
Mm. I hate seeing Deonna Purrazzo lose because she's my girl, but yeah, Rich Swann keeps winning, though, and I think he's doing an exceptional job as Impact World Champion. I think he's doing a great job as the face of the you know, the company. I think he's the days of what happened in WWE with him and his wife and all that other stuff long forgotten now. I think he has definitely turned the corner and has become an exceptional face of the company. So Sacrifice, I think, is the next one. We don't have a date yet, but Sacrifice is probably the next, as I'm pretty sure, the next Impact pay-per-view. We won't go too deep into Vengeance Day. We know, you know, we know what happened. In terms of, you know, the champions and Finn Balor and what happened with Adam Cole and the possible deterioration finally of the Undisputed Era, though I think people are actually kind of sad about that. We did not have any title changes. I was a little surprised. I'm not going to lie, because I thought that either Kushida or Tony Storm were going to win, and neither of them did. Yeah. Did that shock you at all, Nate? That I knew Finn and Pete Dunne was going to be a great match. And apparently, from what I've heard, that's the highlight match to watch.
Yeah,
but I knew Finn was probably going to retain because I've heard they want him to defend the belt at WrestleMania. So that's pretty cool since there's obviously no takeover. But I was expecting either Kushida or I was expecting Kushida to win or one of the other two to beat EO. I was expecting Tony Storm, but that didn't happen. Did either of those not title changes surprise you?
I think the Kushida one probably surprised me the most. But even then, you know, I think they've been doing a really good job of kind of building up Gargano and his little clique. So I could see them sticking with that for a little while longer. The women's match, which was one of the two matches that I caught from TakeOver, that along with the main event with Finn Balor and Peter B. Dunne, as Tim Capel would say. I thought like the main event was excellent. And then the women's match, I really enjoyed. I think that, like, I love Mercedes Martinez. I think she's somebody who's been underrated and undervalued pretty much her entire career. And I really like this new side of Toni Storm, but I don't think the story warranted a title change yet.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with somebody like Io, who has had this long, run. And I still think there's a lot more juice left with this Io Shirai title reign, Steve, that, you know, maybe had this past year been a normal year, we would have gotten more in the women's division in NXT. But it felt like a lot of that spring into the summer in particular was just kind of like a holding pattern. And so I think that, you know, the good thing about the women's match is that you can still go back to Tony and Io in a singles match. And I think that'll be a barn burner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I did watch the whole show, and I thought it was an excellent show because I thought that the women's match was actually the weakest match on the card, and it was still pretty good. There just wasn't that much of a flow of it, and I do think you're right. Like, the way I haven't watched much NXT, but the way they were presenting Io Shirai, it was on a par of, say, Finn Balor. Like, they're, like, in all the promo packages and stuff like that, they were really putting her over as one of the faces of the company. So yeah, that I can see that happening at the next card. You know, Mercedes Martinez just kind of got back in the mix after, you know, asking her to be dropped from Retribution as well as she should have.
That was the smartest move of the year.
Yes. Yep.
But up and down, like, this was a fantastic card. A really, I didn't get to watch it in one sitting, but I could have easily watched it in one sitting. I, you know, most of the talk, I think, is Gargano and Kushida, and then the main event. And obviously with the storyline afterwards with Cole turning on O'Reilly. And then, you know, where is Roderick Strong going to fit in there? And where is Finn Balor going to fit in there? But don't sleep on the MSK Grizzled Young Veterans match. You know, I'm a huge fan of, I can't remember their names, Nash Carter and Wes Lee. Now that they're...
I'm not really feeling those names.
Yeah, no, I'm not either.
It's kind of cool, like, and this is why, and I'm not trying to be like, man, I knew him back when, but, like, it wasn't only, like, a couple of years ago where they were, like, low-card dudes on, like, indies. And then just to, you know, they signed with Impact and, you know, with the Rascals and Troy Miguel and all of a sudden here and being put over, like, right away in their debut tournament. Yeah. And I thought the Grizzled Young Veterans were a great counter for them. It was a really, really fun match. I was incredibly into it.
Yeah, those guys like are easily. I didn't see the match from the Takeover show, but I did see a couple of their matches during the Dusty Classic on NXT, and it's like no disrespect to any of the other teams, Steve, but those guys immediately come in, and not only are they fresh, but I feel like they've set a standard in the tag division now that that everybody else now has to catch up to.
Yeah. And I think it brings back a little bit of the, you know, when they first started the Dusty Classic and they were doing like Ciampa and Gargano and man, I can't remember anybody's old names because they get changed. I was going to say FTR, you know, a lot of the tag team division stuff that was going on there. Like this kind of
alpha,
yeah, kind of restarts that. And like you said, this starts standard, and this was kind of a B plus version of DIY and FTR, like the revival. To be honest, it was very like, and with a crowd, if there was a crowd, this match would have been so over.
What I think Wes Lee was clearly doing. He flipped his name, then went on Facebook and criticized all of our ballots. So that's what he's doing. because he wanted more Buddy Rogers. That's why.
Yeah.
Speaking of old, when you said old guys, I swear to God, I was trying to keep that in. I just couldn't. So anyway, good show. Check it out on the network. Fun matches. And of course, Undisputed Era apparently collapsing. And of course, this past week, there was the first episode of NXT since. So a lot of stuff going on there. NXT definitely feels like there's a shot in the arm now. And guys, we can't forget the debut of LA Knight.
What a name.
Brother of the great 90s jobber LA Gore. Oh, good Lord. From what I heard, and this makes sense, actually, from what I heard, Eli Drake came up with that name. And in his defense, do you really want WWE to steal his name and copyright it? And then he can't be Eli Drake anywhere else. So you might as well pick some shit name and then let WWE keep it. So that's what I think anyway. So anyway, I like seeing, I mean, really, it makes sense business-wise. I do like Eli Drake back. I do like him in WWE. Obviously, that's not a good sign for the NWA, but that's par for the course at the moment.
Yeah.
I think it's a good experience guy, you know, and, you know, he'll make some money. And, I like the move.
As long as he stays in NXT, he should be good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he goes to the main roster. He's fucked. I'm admitting. I am totally admitting that right now. Stay away from either Big Show for the time being. There's no room. There's just no room at the end.
No.
And we're going to get to the big. And speaking of, we're going to get to the big roster right now. So NXT TakeOver was good. I think NXT's got a shot in the arm there. And we'll talk more about them going forward between now and I don't think there's another. Is there another TakeOver? I don't think so. Is there another TakeOver? I don't think there's another. No, there's not scheduled one at the moment. Let me quickly check the schedule. Nope, at the moment there is no. We don't know when the next one will be. It'll probably be some. Excuse me. It'll probably be sometime in like May, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
Late April, early May. All right. All right, guys. Well, to wrap up this week's amazing show, let us talk about Sunday, because we actually have a show Sunday. We have Elimination Chamber. Five matches, two chambers, and an incomplete. Now, maybe I'm missing this, but at the moment, I think there is an incomplete title match.
I think so as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's been. What we're talking about is originally Asuka was to defend the Raw Women's title against Lacey Evans. Well, apparently Lacey Evans is having Ric Flair's love child. Lacey Evans is actually pregnant. Not through Flair, but that's typical Vince. So she obviously is not wrestling. So right now Asuka has no opponent for the Raw Women's title Sunday. So we'll see what happens there. Any thoughts, guys? Any ideas? Nate, any name pop up for you? Oh, I mean, I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, I mean,
you want a double champion, don't you?
There's only one person that can fill that hole, Steve Willis. I mean, it'll like the easy answer is Charlotte, but I don't think that's a match you go to with no promotion.
Right.
Exactly. But it'll be interesting to see who they choose for that spot. I wonder, like maybe they do a one-off and we get like, this would be really cool, but they won't do it. But like, I'd love to see like just an EO Asuka one-off.
That'd be fun. I would be fine with that. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't done something with, I mean, they just had Raw a couple days ago. I'm surprised they haven't said anything that, like, you know, maybe even switch it over to like a SmackDown women's match instead and just put that off. Because it's a 5-match show. So, and there might be something added to like the pre-show, but, you know, they have enough people that they could throw someone in. And now those are the only women, because there's no women's elimination chamber, correct?
No.
Nope. So they can easily either substitute someone in or throw in a Sasha Banks match with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw Lacey Evans in there anyway.
Exactly. Just, you know, she'll fall gently. She'll fall gently.
Just take back bumps.
Yeah, back. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Like Flair does. All right. So anyway, we're not sure who Asuka will defend the Raw Women's Championship against, but we'll see what happens on Sunday. All right.
Yes. Real quick, I will say I've been pleasantly surprised by the dialogue and the discourse surrounding Lacey, because I don't remember what the year was, Steve, but I remember when a similar situation happened with Karma.
Mm-hmm.
And the fallout, like the reaction was a lot more harsh. So I'm glad opinions have evolved in 2021.
Well, yeah.
They need to bring it up.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything. I think you probably know where I was going there, Nate, and I just don't. Yeah.
I miss her. All right, so we'll see what happens there. All right. The only other match on the card that is non-chamber related is a triple threat. I'm actually kind of looking forward to this match. I'm not going to lie. This is going to be a banger, in my opinion. For the United States Championship, Bobby Lashley, Keith Lee, and Riddle. Why am I intrigued by these three together? I have no idea. But this is the night of the renaissance of Keith Lee. I think Keith Lee wins the title. What do you think, Steve?
I think it's going to see a change as well, but I think it's going to be going to Matt Riddle.
Ooh.
I think that's where the storyline has been going, where Bobby Lashley just keeps beating Matt Riddle up. And I think Matt Riddle's going to get his one-up on Bobby Lashley.
Okay. Nate?
Interesting. Nate,
what do you think?
I could break the tie, or I could make it even tire. Mm-hmm. And I'll go...
even tire!
I'll go with Lashley retains. Just just to have a difference of opinion.
All right. Well, a total split.
I think anything could happen with this match, though. I think it's going to be a surprisingly good match.
I do too.
And I could see Keith winning. I could see Matt winning, and I could see Bobby retaining. And they just play this out because, again, like, they've got plenty of time between now and WrestleMania.
Yeah, I agree. But something tells me that we're talking a dark horse here for, like, match of the night.
Mm.
I don't know why, but something's intriguing me about these three working together. I don't know why. Because you got Lashley, a Haas. You got Keith Lee, a Haas. And then you got, you know, Riddle. It just, I don't know. Something about that makes me laugh. All right. Let us now go to the Raw chamber, which is for the WWE Championship. Drew McIntyre will defend against AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Sheamus, and Kofi Kingston. And then, of course, you have Miz's briefcase lingering. He could cash it in against either, but I'm just saying. I got to be honest, guys. For me, if Edge plans on going to SmackDown to take on Roman or whoever, I don't know anybody in that match beating Drew that would make any sense. If Edge plans on defending wanting the Raw, you know, the WWE title match, then obviously there's an outside shot Orton wins this, and then we get the final chapter maybe at WrestleMania. Other than that, I honestly cannot see anybody here. No, with all due respect to Kofi, we love Kofi. But I mean, I can't see anybody else, even AJ. I just can't see anybody else in this match beating Drew for any logical storyline reason, Nate. That's just me.
Yeah, unless it's Sheamus. Like, that's the only one. And even then, like, I don't think they've built that story up enough. Like, that's the problem with the Raw chamber, is the fact that you've got Drew involved makes the outcome a lot more predictable.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would like this match a lot more if it was like SmackDown, where the winner of the chamber gets the shot, as opposed to the champion being in the chamber. But given that Drew's in here, as much as I'd like to see Kofi with another run with the belt, or as much as I think the Sheamus-Drew story could be forwarded in advance through this, it doesn't make any sense right now to take it off of Drew.
Yeah, Steve, I kind of agree here.
Yeah, I say this every year when we preview Elimination Chamber. I hate the Elimination Chamber being in between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Mm. I think it would be better utilized later in the year, because like, it almost lessens the Royal Rumble win, mm-hmm, when you have, holy cow, 11 people essentially getting a title shot.
11 people that lost in the Rumble.
Yeah,
yeah,
at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, I agree. I liked when it debuted in 02 at Survivor Series. I feel like it should be a Survivor Series kind of thing,
mm-hmm,
with the Survivor Series matches and then have it the chamber. I think that I like that idea. I've always liked that idea. But
yeah, I think Drew is going to retain, and the only reason why is because I think there is going to be some sort of fiend wackiness in the middle of the match to take out Randy Orton. Like, I can see him, like, coming through the ring, or lights going out and Alexa Bliss appearing, and, you know, stuff like that, because that's clearly where they're going at Mania, is a final match between the two of them, like you said, Nate.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that, Nate. So we all think that.
Yeah, that, like, what's the point of the match then?
Right, exactly. Mm. Something fun. Someone's going to get smacked around, and it should be fun. So we all think Drew's going to retain. All right. So obviously, when one of them is a title match, the other one is a number one contenders match. So for the number one contender slot for the Universal Championship, we have Jey Uso, Kevin Owens, King Corbin, he's still with the company, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, and Daniel Bryan. And the winner of the chamber immediately gets the title shot against the head of the table. So Roman Reigns will come out at the end of the night and take on the winner of the chamber for the Universal title, which I think is genius heel work right there. Kind of like when Edge cashed in at Rumble 06, or at New Year's Revolution 06. He's going to face somebody who's going to be beaten to shit and pick the bones. Love heel Roman Reigns. Love it. I have a dark horse pick for this match. Here it is. Roman Reigns and Cesaro. That's my dark horse pick. I know everyone's going to think Daniel Bryan. I think Cesaro.
That's what I would like to see win. And he cut a really fun promo.
Yeah,
on
he did.
Paul Heyman on Talking Smack.
And yeah, I agree.
He doesn't get the chance to do. In my opinion, he has everything. He has every part of him screams champion. Like, it always has. He's like,
I agree.
It's like him and Big E. You know, we always talk about Big E. Like Big E and Cesaro are like guys like, I mean, he's like a Greek god. He's can wrestle any type of match. I've always, and I don't mean like he's going to be the face of the company type guy, but you know, if you look at who's the face of the WWE, I would say Roman Reigns, like hands down, way more than Drew McIntyre. And I can see Cesaro like in my fantasy world as like your second heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. I could see that happening. Yeah, like I've heard people talk about Kevin Owens possibly, but you just had that match. What I like about this is just not knowing where Edge is going.
Mm.
Because I still think like Roman Reigns is where you want to do that match.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, then I think Daniel Bryan should be the winner. And then, you know, Daniel Bryan, the ultimate underdog, and then have Roman Reigns eke out a win. Like if the goal is to have Edge versus Drew McIntyre, then I can see it as a Cesaro, but like then who does Reigns even go against at WrestleMania? So it's like, as much as I dislike the Raw Elimination Chamber match, I kind of like this one because I like having an unknown. I like that Lashley Lee Riddle match because we can all pick a different possible winner, and it's not like, oh, I'm just gonna turn in to see the inevitable. I'm leaning towards Daniel Bryan. I think Cesaro would be a great choice, and I would love to see that match, even though no one would possibly think Cesaro would win. But I don't think any of these people, no matter who wins, none of them beat Roman.
No,
so there you go.
Yeah, it doesn't matter either. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I think if the championship match were on another pay-per-view, then I'd go with Daniel Bryan.
I agree.
But given that it's the same night, I think your choices are either Kevin Owens to finally, once and for all, definitively end that feud, or Cesaro. And of the two, I'd rather see Cesaro, which means the WWE will probably give us Reigns and Owens one last time.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we see Daniel Bryan here. I think, because we got time to build to that. We have another, you know, we have 6 weeks or whatever, yeah. And another pay-per-view coming. Before we have to deal with that. What if Jey Uso steps aside and Dominic Mysterio gets in the chamber? That would be ridiculous. I may actually start watching AEW if that happens. All right. So there's our Elimination Chamber picks. Join us Sunday. Callum McDougall will be on the Place to Be Twitch feed. We'll have a few of our fun, friendly name voices there as we do our live watch of the chamber. Guys, what a show. What a show. Every show is a great show, but this particularly tonight was a great show. We always love having Brandon Thurston on. He's amazing. We had a busy night with matches and shows. And the best part is, in 2 weeks, we get to talk about something, a promotion we barely even scratched the surface on today. AEW has a pay-per-view coming up. Yes. Revolution. Nate's boy, Sting. Bringing in the $50, baby. So in 2 weeks on our next episode, episode 168, we will preview AEW Revolution because it'll be the first AEW pay-per-view on a Sunday. Because it is, of course, nothing's going. Obviously, WWE has nothing going on. So, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, no, I'm right. It's the 9th, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So it'll be the first AEW pay-per-view on a Sunday night. That should be very interesting. So join us in 2 weeks on our next show where we will preview that. We'll talk about the final New Beginnings show, and hopefully John Dean Ambrosley does not have that belt anymore, nor will he gain any belt the following show either. Is it really sad that I'm so in love right now with Kenny Jazz Hands just so he doesn't lose this fucking match? In any event. Hopefully,
the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly. Best anymore. One of my favorite ESPN 30 for 30 titles is the one they did on the Lakers Celtics rivalry. Best of enemies. So there we go. So everybody, be safe. Stay safe. Stay warm, depending where you live around the country or the world. For Brother Nate, for Brother Steve, I am Brother Scott. You have been in the main event. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the chamber. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Bill.
I had a joke here, but I'm still getting over the second page of Brandon's PDF, so I'll get back to you next episode.